Okay, here we go. We're on Gemara Sota Chaf Gimel Amud Aleph. We're trying to figure out why a woman who's a Sota, she brings her komates, that is brought and that is burnt, and then the husband's part is burnt, and we're trying to resolve two conflicting laws. On the one hand, she needs a kapara, so she needs to bring a komates. On the other hand, a kohen is not allowed to burn an entire korban once part of it has been brought. There's a number of laws. Number one, a kohen's mincha has to be totally burnt. On the other hand, a wife who needs kaparas a sota, she has to have a kamitza separated. The Torah seems to imply ownership of the mincha by the husband on the fact that he's the monetary owner of it, but ownership of the wife that she's the spiritual owner who needs the kapara. So we try to resolve that by saying, okay, so the komates part she brings up as an offering, that deals with her forgiveness. And the rest, the kohen, the rest of it is burnt because a kohen's thing, you can't eat the mincha. But then we said there's another problem because the Torah says there's a problem that if part of an offering is burnt, you're not allowed to burn the rest of it. There's a prohibition against burning the rest. Like you can't burn on the altar honey and chametz. You can't burn part of an offering that's already been burnt as part of the Reich Nichoach Hashem. So how do we deal with that issue, burning the entire thing when part of it's already been used as an offering? So he gave an answer, according to Rabbi Eliezer. Rabbi Eliezer says, well, listen, you can always make a condition. He could say, well, I'm not sure exactly what I have to do, but if this really is an offering and my wife is really bringing a burnt offering, so guess what? I'm allowed to dispose of it as fuel, if you recall. You're allowed to bring wood. So I'm bringing this part as fuel, not as a korban. I'm not bringing it as a reach nichoach, as a pleasant smell, as an offering to God. I'm bringing it as fuel. And if I bring it as fuel, then we have a way to deal with it. So the woman is bringing her komates because that's her offering. Then there's a problem. The kohen can't eat the rest of it. Okay, so he's got to burn the rest of it. It might be a problem. You're burning the rest of an offering. You're not allowed to burn it once the offering part of it's been brought already. The answer is he brings that as fuel. So if the halacha is more so that it's not the kohen's at all, then I'd be happy that it would be a korban tashem. But it might not be. So therefore, and that was a question when we had mixed up pieces of an ola and pieces of a chatas were mixed together. You're not sure what to do with it. Those pieces are ready. What am I going to do with it? So he said, you make it with conditions. Same thing, make a condition here that if in case really there's already been an offering and the rest is considered my offering and I can't bring more of that offering, I can't bring more. So I bring it as fuel. And that was one nice answer. Problem is, there's a chachamim who disagree with Rabbi Eliezer and says, you can't do that shtick. You can't bring the offerings as fuel. So according to them, how are they going to deal with this issue? That's the next number 5-6 lines of the Gemara that hopefully we can negotiate. So ha nicha la Rabbi Eliezer, this answer was a good answer according to Rabbi Eliezer. Why? The Eislei Haisfara, he subscribes to this principle that you could use part of the animal offering and use it as fuel to burn the Mizbeach, and therefore there's no issue of bringing a second Reach Nichoach on top of the first Reach Nichoach. But the rabbis argue on him. They don't have this svara that Rabbi Eliezer has. They say you're not allowed to burn the remaining part, even for the sake of firewood. Now we're not going to go through the whole machlokas, but they disagree. And they say, in that case, when achatas limbs are intermingled with ola limbs, look what he says. All the limbs must be left overnight. They say, we don't have this option. Remember we said that as a possibility? You can't burn it because you may not be allowed to burn it. So leave it overnight so that they are invalidated and they are then burnt outside of Yerushalayim. We discussed that idea yesterday. We said that's not such a great thing to do because we don't want to initially leave it as no sort. That's not a nice thing to do to it. But the rabbis are saying, well, we don't have another choice. We don't. In other words, can you, if you've got remnants, you're not sure what to do with it. Can I eat it or must I burn it? But if I burn it, then the problem is maybe I'm not allowed to burn it because I already burnt poor part of the offering. So Rabbi Eliezer, I got a way out. We'll just use it as fuel. Finished. The rabbis say, you can't use it as fuel because at the end of the day, it's still being brought on the Mizbeach. They don't go with that Svara. So the only option they had, it's not an attractive alternative, but we just leave it and don't do anything with it. Allow it to become no sore, leftover, which is in itself not a nice thing to do to the korban. But I don't have another option because they hold that you cannot use it as fuel because that's tantamount to being the same as offering it on the Mizbeach. So if they don't agree with that, so now what's going to happen with our case? My Ikalamemer, what is there to say? What are we going to do with the remnants of the Minch of the Kohen's wife where she brought an offering and they say you can't use it as fuel? So what are you going to do with it? What do we do with the remnants? Because there is a problem of burning something that's already been burnt as offered as a korban. You can't bring the rest of it as a korban. Now, this next part's the tricky part, because now the Gemara is assuming you know lots of information. So we're going to say, to Avdalahu, Rabbi Lazar, Rabbi Shimon. They will go like Rabbi Lazar, the son of Rabbi Shimon, a different Rabbi Lazar, that they could burn the remnants. It'll fit like Rabbi Lazar of Shimon. Why? Because let's see the following brisa that brings a machlokes between the Chachamim and Rabbi Lazar of Shimon in another area of Korbanos. And what area is that? Did Tanya, we learn in a brisa, Rabbi Lazar of Shimon Omer. Rabbi Lazar of Shimon says, Hakomates Karav La'atzmo. We'll see what case he's talking about. We don't know what case he's talking about yet. The komates of a mincha is brought by itself. And now you have a problem. What do we do with the leftover shirayim? It's also a situation we'll see as a problematic situation. They say we have another option. Vashirayim and the remnants, mispasrim al beis hadeshen, are scattered on the ash heap. That's another possibility. We're not burning it on the mizbeach per se as the regular things are burnt, but it's put on the ash heap. Now what's going on over here? Okay, this going in a case. The case over there is a specific korban. It's called a korban ola v'yored. Literally means goes up and down. Or in fancy English, it's a very variable chatas offering. Now, they're for three specific averos, which are falsely denying under oath knowledge of testimony. If you swear falsely, there's three particular averos. One, coming to the Beis HaMikdash, or eating consecrated food while you're tame is number two. Okay. And so we have denying, falsely denying under oath, and then swearing falsely. That's a different case because now you're a witness swearing falsely. The first case where you're being accused of something and you deny. The third case is you swear falsely. Those three cases are a unique type of sin, and there's a unique type of chatas brought. And the chatas varies according to the financial ability of the person. If the man is well-to-do, he can afford it. He has to bring a female goat as a chatas. That's expensive. If he can't afford that, you bring two pigeons. One is a chatas, one is an ola. That's less expensive. If he's really poor, then he brings a mincha for the chatas. Okay, now that price is dealing with a poor guy who has a mincha for the chatas. Okay, so what do you do with that type of a mincha? So there's a machlokes between Reb Shimon and the Tanakama. And then we still have to come to Reb Elazar b'Reb Shimon. There's going to be three opinions over here. And we have to come to Reb Elazar b'Reb Shimon. And even these two opinions aren't going to help us. So what do we do? What do we do with the leftovers when a guy is bringing a minchas chatas ola v'yored, the variable chatas for these three sins? He has to bring it. So a komes is brought. Question is, what do you do with the rest? So the Tanakhama, the Chachamim say that this mincha must be entirely burnt on the altar, just like a Kohen's voluntary mincha. He says, we treat it like a Kohen's voluntary mincha. And he brings psukim to support this. I'm not going to get into all the details over there. We'll just say that's what he holds. You burn the whole thing. It's just like a Kohen's. Reb Shimon argues, says the verse doesn't state that it should belong to, it's not like a Kohen. It doesn't learn it that way. He says, he says they're burnt separately on the altar, not together. As the Chachamim say, they're burnt in one shot, but he says they're burnt separately on the altar. Okay, and why? Because Shimon does not hold that it's prohibited to burn on the altar something remaining from a sacrifice whose altar part is burnt there. He doesn't hold to that whole idea. He disagrees with that whole idea that once you burnt once, you can't burn the rest. Okay, so those are two opinions. Do you burn the whole thing straight? Do you burn them separately? Rabbi Lazar, the son of Shimon, this is the opinion we want. He gives the third opinion. He says the komets is burnt on the altar, as his father says, but the remnants are neither burnt on the altar nor eaten. Rather, they're scattered on the ash heap. Okay, a separate place. You just scatter it on an ash heap over there. That's all. So, and that's how you deal with issues if you're not sure what to do with the rest of the korban. Hence, according to the rabbis who disagree with Rabbi Lezer's view that remnants may be placed on the altar for the sake of fire. Now, let's go back to what the rabbis who argue on Rabbi Lezer. Rabbi says you can't take the remnants and just burn it as firewood. You can't burn it as firewood. So what do? So the remnants are just put on the ash heap. Okay, now where's the ash heap? It should also be noted that the ash heap referred to here is the place east of the altar where the ashes from the altar and discarded portions of a burnt altar were deposited. Accordingly, the ash heap mentioned by Rabbi Lezer, the son of Shimon, is apparently not the ash heap in the courtyard where invalid sacrifices are burnt. So it's a separate ash heap. Okay, so he says that's the Eitzah. You know, you can't eat it, and we don't know if we can burn it on the Mizbech like a Kohen's as well. So I'll tell you what, we just put it on the ash heap. And that's it. That's the end of it. And that ends the issue.
So these ashes are all cold. They've been moved from the altar.
Yeah.
So how is that?
Or could be, no, they burnt separately. It's a separate place where they're burnt, but not anything to do with an offering. It's not on the Mizbeach, nothing. A Kohen's thing is done on the Mizbeach, totally burnt. We're saying you're not going to burn it. You don't even use it as fuel. We just put it as an ash heap with separate fire in the off the courtyard over there,
and
it's a fire there, and just burn it. But it has no sacrificial intent, and it doesn't remain leftover or anything. It's just burnt, and that's it. Because we don't have anything to do with it. We don't know what to do with it, and that's how we deal with it. So that will be that opinion. Because you're right, it could be a problem that you can't bring. The Kohen's thing's got to be fully burnt. On the other hand, I can't bring a second time to burn it on the altar. So just put it on the ash heap, and we're fine with that.
But remember when we said before about if it was okay, and we'll make it, it's an offering, and God, you decide. Well, what if it was going to be, supposed to be an offering? Remember we said?
Yeah, okay.
So if you do it the ash heap.
Well, it's just the leftovers. But it's just the leftovers. It's just the leftovers now.
No, but we're doing that with the leftovers. I'm saying
if you want it, I would bring it because I'm bringing it on the altar. Here we're not bringing it on the altar, so I don't need that condition anymore.
Yeah, you don't need the condition, but
what do I have? I have leftovers. So what do you do with them? You eat them, right? So I'm not going to eat them. And is it fully a coins? Listen. Yeah, if it was, I'd bring it on the altar. But he's saying you can't bring it on the altar at all. It's not a viable option because we can't use it as fuel. Since I can't use it as fuel, if it's brought on the altar, then that's for sure a sacrifice. He's saying, remember the Chacham said, you don't have the option of saying it's fuel. So I can't bring it on the main altar because the only thing I'm doing is bringing an offering. And the only backup is fuel. And if you don't hold it to be, you can't use it as fuel, then I can't bring it on the altar. Right? So now my only other option is, okay, you know what? Even if it is an offering, it's just not going to be. So the coin's not going to benefit from it anyway. It is going to be totally burnt, but not on the Mizbeach. It'll be burnt in the ash heap, that's separately.
So how different is that than just burning it somewhere else, just like you would just burn trash?
Well, we don't, it's not trash.
No, but we're almost, but what, it, what are the ashes that they're burning? Like,
no, there's other animals that were not,
ash heap is,
it's only for things that are used, that can't be used in the base of Mizbeach, whatever, only holy things. You don't burn your garbage there. It's an ash heap that's designated for specific things that we can't do. Like it says, discarded portions of a bird ola were deposited there.
So, yeah,
so parts they couldn't use. But it was all part of a korban. It's not like I just take my junk and burn it there. There's parts of korbanas we couldn't use, and it couldn't be burnt, and we couldn't eat it, we couldn't use it. So there's another third level holy way of discarding it, as it were.
So maybe you could say it's like a geniza versus putting stuff in the trash.
Yeah, right. Okay, exactly. A spiritual geniza, a respectful way of burning, because it is done in the courtyard. It's still a holy place. So that's how we get out of that issue. top of the next page. And even the rabbis who argue in that case, even the rabbis who argue with Reb Shimon, who says we don't do that, Afila Rabbanan lo pliga lo Reb Elazar ber Shimon, the only time they argue is only by the Minchas Chote, that variable offering of the Kohanim, they argue. But the Bas HaKrovi, because it was something that could be brought, that's why they say, no, you should burn it all in the Mizbech. Aval Baha, but here you can't bring it anyway. Afila Rabbanan, the Rabbanan would even agree to him. And they would even, in this case, by the Sota, would agree to what he has to say. And that's what he says. In the case of a married woman to a Kohen, we must consider the possibility the wife is considered the primary owner of the Mincha, and what remains after the Kohen is removed are bona fide remnants of a Mincha, which may not be offered up on the altar. Therefore, the rabbis would agree in this case that those remnants are to be scattered to the ash heap. So we have two ways of dealing with it. So machlokas, what we do with a Kohen's wife, Sota Korban, her Mincha is, her Kohen is brought. Do we, according to Reb Elazar, burn the rest as fuel, or do we just burn the rest on the ash heap? That's the machlokas of what we do. Okay, we're out of the hard Gemara.
Doesn't sound like the latter option is the safest.
But it's not maybe the safest, but it's not treating it as holy as you could. Reb Elazar, since he says you can use it as fuel, it's certainly better to burn it on the Mizbeach if you could. So he has this out by saying it's fuel. But if you don't hold that you can't bring it as fuel, he says there's no such thing as fueling the Mizbeach, then you have to come on to that. So it does lose out that it's not brought on the altar. On the other hand, it's safer. You've avoided other issues. So it's a trade-off, as it were. Okay, now the rest of, till the bottom of the page, it's just quick 2-3 line situations, because remember we said differences between a woman Kohen and a man Kohen, and we just need the sources for everything here. So this is all just very quick 1-2 liners back and forth. Bas Yisrael Hanesua. If the daughter of Yisrael is married to a Kohen, right, her mincha's got to be burned. But if a Kohen is married to Yisrael, her mincha is eaten. In other words, if it doesn't belong to, she was a Kohen, but she married a non-Kohen, it's eaten. The mincha of a Kohenes is eaten. The mincha of a Kohen is not eaten. So I want to know what's the difference. My time, or what's the logical difference between a Kohen and a woman who was a Kohen? Damar Kro, because the pasuk says like this, very simple. V'chol minchas Kohen, every mincha of a Kohen, kolil, is entirely burnt, tia lo socha, you cannot eat it. Right? So this applies only to, it says, a Kohen. Kohen v'lo Kohenes, a male Kohen and not a female Kohen. That's all. Torah says only male Kohens have this law, not a female Kohen. Same idea, if a female Kohen has relations with someone that she cannot have, she's a halala forever. But if a Kohen has relations with someone he can't have, he can't do the service while he's married to that person. But if he gets rid of her, then he's not going to be a forever halal. So what's the difference there? Kohenes mischalelas, Kohen ain't mischalel. A Kohenes can be permanently profaned and disqualified from the kuna, but a Kohen not permanently profaned for what he does. Minolan, how do we know that? The Omar Kra, because the Torah says... It says when a man, a Kohen, married, lives with a woman he shall not. Let's say a Kohen to divorce you. The Torah is saying he can't do this. Why? What's going to be the effect of it? It says, Vlo yechalel zar obamav. So his seed, his children, should not be called chalolim. If a Kohen is married to a divorcee and they have children, the boys are chalolim. They cannot work in the temple. Finished. Permanent. The boys. What about the father who does it? Torah doesn't say you shall not be married to a divorcee because that will make you a chalol. It says it'll make your children a chalol. Meaning to say your children will be permanent chalolim. But you're only a chalol as long as you're married to her. If you're not married to her, then you're not a chalol anymore. The emphasis, why does it say you shouldn't desecrate yourself? It says no, because you're going to desecrate your children. So it seems to say your children, zaro mischalel, your children will be permanently profaned. But the implication is, vahu eino mischalel. He does not become permanently profane. Because the verse could have written, lo yechalel, rather than, it could have said, v'lo yachel, instead of v'lo yechalel. So since it says chalel with two lamids derives a coin causes two people to become profane by such a union. The offspring, which the Torah said explicitly, and the woman herself. Those two become profane, but he does not become profaned. Okay, yichalel. You shouldn't profane two people. Zaro, your children, the woman you were with, she's also not eligible anyway, but he is okay.
How did we get the two lemmas to say it's two people, but the wife and the children, and not him and the children, or him and the wife? How do we decide it's not him? It's clear the children.
Because the implication is not him. It says, V'lo yechalel zaro, his children, and not him. Because
how do we get the wife versus him?
Because then it would say he should be, he's desecrating others. It's saying he shall not desecrate. He's desecrating others as opposed to become desecrated. If it would say he shall not desecrate himself. It doesn't say that. He's meaning he shouldn't desecrate others. So what he does can only desecrate others, but not himself.
And two lemmas means two people.
Two people, but we would have to say desecrating himself. He's desecrating others. Okay, what about a Kohen cannot become Tomei, but a female Kohen can? Where's the difference for that? My timer, what's the reason? The Torah says clearly, Emor el HaKohanim, speak the Kohanim, B'nei Aaron, the sons of Aaron. Why didn't say the daughters of Aaron? So B'nai Aaron are the one, and then the laws of Tumor are discussed afterwards. B'nai Aaron, the sons of Aaron, v'lo b'nos Aaron, but not the daughters of Aaron. That's an exclusion. Okay, same thing, a Kohen, ochel b'kotche kadashim, the Kohen can eat the holiest of holies foods, but a female Kohen not. How do you know that? Do you see what it says? Kol zochor b'vnei Aaron yochlena. Any male of the sons of Aaron eats the holiest of holies. Again, excluding women. Now we want to know the difference between males and females. Uma bein ish, the ish. So what's the difference between the legal status between a man and a woman? And we said a man, if he's a confirmed metzora, he has to let his hair grow and rip his garments, while a woman does not. How do we know that? Tana Rabbanan, we learned in a braisa, when it talks about a metzora, it says ish. If a man should be afflicted with tzaras, and that's in general, but of course a woman can have the laws of tzaras, but we just said that she doesn't have certain laws of tzaras to let her hair grow. This says if a man has tzaras, well, how do we know even if a woman is at all a mitzora? Ein li ela ish. I don't know that a man can be a mitzora. Ish minayin. I don't know that a woman can be a mitzora. Kishu Omer, it says later on, it says vahatzarua asher bo, and the one afflicted with tzaras, okay, will do what? His garment shall be torn, and the hair of his head shall be unshorn. Harei kan shnayim, we have two. There are two types of people over here. In other words, the verse could have just says, his garment shall be torn, since we're already talking about a mitzora. It already says, a person who is a mitzora. Why do you have to repeat and say, v'hatzarua, and the person who is a mitzora, who has this, does this and this and that? That's a superfluous word.
You know, Miriam was mitzora.
I know, but that's true. But still, that could have been a unique situation. That was after the laws of tzaras were given. All right? So how do we know? So the superfluous hatzarua, the one afflicted with tzaras, says there's a second person for that. So now we know there's a second person. If that's the case, why did it have to say ish the first time? Imke matam alam ish. Why did it say ish the first time if you have tzarua the second time? So the answer is le'inyan regarding shalamata, regarding what's stated below in the next pasuk. That ish parea, a man rends his garments, a woman does not. That is, the term ish, a man, does not exclude a woman from the basic law of tumah, because we add the word sarua afterwards. But then afterwards it says, and what does he do? He grows his hair and rips his garment. So that, the ish part, nullifies that halacha. Okay, I got to stop over here because I got to leave a little early. I have a blood test, so we'll finish.